Well, first, they've instituted a blockade. So my question is, with what? I mean, what ships are they using? The Abraham Lincoln, the Carrier Strike Group, it was like, three, 4 weeks ago, it was 220 miles off the coast of Iran. Then it got blasted with a group of drones and missiles from Iran, and it retreated to 700 miles away because if they get any closer, they get shot. You've got two Marine expeditionary units in the area, 11th and 31st, and they are on what it looked like helicopters or aircraft carriers, but they largely carry helicopters and vertical takeoff landing aircraft. And the reason I'm focused on that is if you're going to interdict shipping, you're going to need to and you can't put your ships in close to shore. If they're in like 20 miles away from the Iranian shore, they're going to get blasted. Those are carrying. So Iran's not shipping to itself, so you're not going to have an Iranian flagged vessel. So you're most likely going to have Chinese flagged or be, Panama, some other obscure country. Then if it but if it's oil belongs to China or India or Pakistan or Japan, then there'll be a case for each of those countries to argue that this is an act of war against them. So this hasn't been thought through very well. And again, the United States, they're busy manipulating the stock and oil markets. This action is going to limit the supply of oil. Well, the ceasefire, it was sought by the United States, not by Iran. And that was a sign that the United States is, we're suffering the pain from this. It's not, it hasn't turned out to be the success story we thought it would be. Now, Iran took it, said, okay, we can do it with a 2 week pause. Because what they're rebuilding and rearming and resupplying during that time. China has stepped up its support to Iran significantly. That when if and or when the war resumes and the United States tries to fly its planes overhead, more of them are now going to be shot down than before.
Welcome back, everybody, to the show. It's just Steve Yang here with Natural Resource Stocks. I am with Larry C. Johnson, former CIA analyst and who's also worked in counterterrorism State Department. Larry, how are you today?
I'm old.
You're old. That's one.
Alive on the right side of the grass still.
That's one way to put it. Larry, lots going on. As of this morning, the U.S. appears to have imposed a naval blockade or restricted shipping zone in the area. And got to ask you, is this mainly leverage against Iran and indirect pressure play on China, given how much of the energy flows through the region? And how do you see things escalating from here?
Well, first, they've instituted a blockade. So my question is, with what? I mean, what ships are they using? The Abraham Lincoln, the Carrier Strike Group. It was like, 3, 4 weeks ago, it was 220 miles off the coast of Iran. Then it got blasted with a group of drones and missiles from Iran, and it retreated to 700 miles away because if they get any closer, they get shot. You've got two Marine expeditionary units in the area, 11th and 31st, and they are on what it looked like helicopters or aircraft carriers, but they largely carry helicopters and vertical takeoff landing aircraft. And the reason I'm focused on that is if you're going to interdict shipping, you're going to need to and you can't put your ships in close to shore. If they're in like 20 miles away from the Iranian shore, they're going to get blasted. So the U.S. ships are so they're going to have to do this interdiction, about 500, 600 miles offshore. Okay, so let's imagine that the shore is the center of a pizza. All right. Cut that pizza. One slice of pizza looks like that, right?
Yeah.
So you're out here. That means the farther out you go, the more territory you have to cover. So that creates a problem right there from trying to do interdiction. You know, yeah, if you're down here at that narrow part, mm-hmm. yeah, it's easy because it's confined. But at that point, you're going to get hit with drones, with missiles, underwater drones, torpedoes perhaps. So the United States can't put any force there. The vessels, who they interdict, again, depends on what flag the vessels are carrying. So Iran's not shipping to itself, so you're not going to have an Iranian-flagged vessel. So you're most likely going to have Chinese-flagged or be, you know, Panama, some other obscure country. But if it's oil belongs to China or yeah. India or Pakistan or Japan, then there'll be a case for each of those countries to argue that this is an act of war against them. So this hasn't been thought through very well. And again, the United States, they're busy manipulating the stock and oil markets. This action is going to limit the supply of oil. But they're trying to pretend that, oh, no, that'll be fine. Iran's going to surrender. Iran's not going to surrender. And this blockade is going to fail, ultimately. This is not going to be Venezuela all over again. Because this time they can shoot back. And depending upon, if I'm the Chinese, I'm going to put a security detail on each of my ships. And anybody that dares try to land on my ship, we'll blow them out of the sky.
Yeah.
Very simple. I think China is now extremely pissed off at the United States and sick and tired of the bullying and of the threats and of the attempts to control the Chinese. I mean, if I was them, that'd be my feeling, that no, we're not going to put up with this anymore. You don't get to tell us what to do. You know, we're adults. We're a grown-up country now. In fact, we're doing a lot better than you are, economically, industrially. You need us more than we need you.
So, is this act of bullying? I mean, I feel like the U.S. isn't making any friends, and all its allies are either turning away or, siding or moving towards, you know, China or things like that. But, you know, where does this leave the U.S.?
Isolated. You know, this, I liked how you expressed that. We seem to be losing allies and, you know, alienating people. That's all Donald Trump is doing right now. Look at what he did with the Catholics yesterday. He attacks Pope Leo as being some sort of commie sympathizer. And, you know, the Catholics I know have reacted with outrage to this. It's like, you know, they're saying, who the hell does Donald Trump think he is? On the same day, on Easter, Orthodox Easter Sunday, he posts a picture of him as like Jesus. The Savior. Now, you hear his lame-ass excuse today. He comes out and says, oh, I thought it was just a doctor. Okay, then why'd you take it down if you were playing Dr. Kildare? You know, he has lost touch with reality. He has no filter. He irritates, alienates everyone. Friends, foes alike. You know, he complains about Japan and South Korea. They haven't helped at all. Yet, they're your allies in Asia. Insults Europe right and left. And then wants Europe to come save his ass in the Strait of Hormuz. Yeah, it's just... Trump is... he's a danger now. I strongly believe he should be removed from office. Not that J.D. Vance would be some great replacement, but at least he's got more of a controlled temperament. He knows enough not to, call countries motherfuckers.
I've never seen anything like this.
Well, like, join the crowd. I've been around a lot longer than you. I mean, the closest we came to this was Lyndon Baines Johnson. So Johnson, when he was president, he was notorious. Like, he'd be sitting there talking to you like this, and he'd keep talking, and he'd go over here to the toilet, sit down, he'd take a shit and keep talking to you, you know, or he'd expose himself. I mean, yeah, he was a crude dude, but he was not out of touch with reality like Trump is, and taking so many different positions. Yeah, like on one issue, Trump has said that Iran's control of the Strait of Hormuz, not our problem because, you know, we don't get anything from it, so why do we care, to demanding that the Europeans come help blockade it because it's so important, we got to have it open, to yelling and screaming at the Iranians, how dare they block it, to now he's going to blockade it. Yeah, there's no logic to it. You know, because the fundamental issue is the fact that there is now controlled movement through the Strait of Hormuz, and it's under the control of Iran, means that Iran is in a powerful position to dictate who can get what in the global economy. And it's, you know, working. If you're a friend of Iran, you don't have a problem. Take what you need. But the products that come out of the Gulf, the Arab Gulf states, particularly UAE, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, Kuwait, yeah, they're limited because they've had significant damage to much of their infrastructure, so they don't necessarily have oil to pump to deliver.
Yeah. So we talked about how this was supposed to be a quick war, something that was in and out, a 4-day operation sort of thing, clearly turned into something much more drawn out. Is Washington now stuck in a situation it didn't anticipate? And was the ceasefire a real off ramp, or just a pause to reposition itself?
Well, the ceasefire, it was sought by the United States, not by Iran, and that was a sign that the United States was, you know, we're suffering the pain from this. It's not, it hasn't turned out to be the success story we thought it would be. Now, Iran took it, said, okay, we can do it with a 2-week pause, because what they're rebuilding and rearming and resupplying during that time. China has stepped up its support to Iran significantly, that when the war resumes and the United States tries to fly its planes overhead, more of them are now going to be shot down than before. So the United States is going to find that the threat from the Iranian air defense has dramatically increased. There was an off-ramp. They did have the essence of a deal, the 10 points that Iran laid out, and basically it was, they wanted all sanctions released now, release the sanctions, remove the sanctions, release the frozen funds, except that we've got sovereignty over the Strait of Hormuz, and stop the attacks in Lebanon, and stop the attack on us, and remove your military forces from the area, and then also get rid of the UN and IAEA sanctions. So what the deal the United States could have had at that point is Iran would have agreed to the limits that were part of the JCPOA on enriching uranium, that would have left it at like 3%. Anything that was up to like 20% would be handled by Russia or China. But instead of a 10-year limit, it'd be permanent. That way Donald Trump could come out and say, see, I've got a permanent solution. Iran is caved. You know, they could describe it that way. and that would have ended the war. Now, that would have pissed off Israel. And that goes back to one of your very original questions. Who's calling the shots here? Israel's calling the shots. not the United States.
So does Israel and the U.S., do their objectives align at all? And if they don't, then if Israel's calling the shots, then where does that leave the U.S.? I mean, in terms of how it interacts with Iran and doing what's best for the U.S. interest, is it just doesn't seem like, you know, the other question with that is, why is U.S. doing what Israel is telling them to do?
Money. They paid for it. You know, the Israeli saying is, America, the best money government, the best government money can buy. So they bought and paid for the Congress. 95% of the members of Congress are on the payroll. Donald Trump has received, you know, hundreds of millions of, you know, what, a quarter of $1 million from Miriam Adelson. No, it's this is all about the money, and Israel's control of the U.S. political process. However, that's what's being that's also being destroyed right now as we're talking about it, because you know, it used to be majority of Americans favored Israel and U.S. relationship with Israel. Now it's completely reversed. More and more saying we are too beholden to Israel, and Israel exercises too much influence over American politics. So, but again, that agreement was there to be had, and there was a peaceful way out, and Israel sabotaged it.
So you said 95% of the U.S. Congress is getting paid by Israel?
Yes.
Can you expound on that and tell me what that looks like?
Just go look up the donation list from AIPAC. Very, very, very few members of Congress are not getting money. And you don't, in any attempt to, you know, bring this up, you're accused of being anti-Semitic. No, I'm just anti-Zionist. This has nothing to do with people who speak Semitic languages, because I'd argue that many of those Zionists who are behind this, they don't even speak a Semitic language.
So you talked about Israel calling the shots. Where does the narrative come from that the U.S. is calling the shots? And then at the same time, there are claims, you know, the information around the war is tightly managed. Is it tightly managed by Israel? And if you can tell me what goes on underneath and, you know, who's really driving what we're hearing.
It's tightly managed by both. I mean, the United States is covering up casualties. Israel is covering up the damage that's being done to Israel with the ballistic missile attacks that took place. Give me an example of how the United States is calling the shots vis-a-vis Israel. Or can you?
I cannot.
Yeah, that's my point. It's nothing where we don't have a single example where we're telling Israel, shut the hell up and sit down. The last president to do that was Dwight David Eisenhower. When there was the Suez Canal crisis took place, and the Brits, along with the Israelis, tried to take the Suez Canal. And the United States weighed in and told them both, get the hell out and stop it. No, you don't get to do this.
So I don't even know what's real anymore. The more I talk to you, the more I realize that all I hear on the news can't be trusted.
Yes. No, and do not trust it. Do not trust the news. I agree. it's largely propaganda. You know, it's designed to shape you and gaslight you. You know, we're told repeatedly, like, Iran's the number one sponsor of terrorism. Okay, let me see if I could. Do I have this document handy? Let me see if I can find it here. It's opening up. It was something I drove. Got recently from the State Department website. Nah, I don't have it here. Sorry, but you know, it showed who the major countries sponsoring terrorism are, or the major groups conducting terrorism. None of them were sponsored by Iran at all. Look, Iran's basic so-called sponsorship of terrorism extends to Hamas and Hezbollah. Hamas is not an international terrorist group in the sense it's not out carrying attacks in Germany and France, in the United States and South America. No, it's a nationalist. It's a nationalist liberation group fighting to, you know, push Israel out of the land that it claims. And there you get into this whole argument of who owned what, who is entitled to what. And you know, the Israelis insist, oh, we're entitled. God gave us this land. Then he asks, do you believe in God? No, no. But God gave us this land, even though I don't believe in him. So, and then Hezbollah. Again, Hezbollah is not an international terrorist group. It's not. Its goal is focused upon liberating the Shia Muslims from Israeli oppression. That's basically it. Now, Iran supports them, yes. But they've not been in the forefront. They weren't ISIS. They're not Boko Haram. They're not Al-Qaeda. The groups that have been responsible for the overwhelming majority of terrorist incidents over the last 30 years are these radical Sunni groups. Groups that have been sponsored by people out of largely out of Saudi Arabia, but also out of Qatar.
So, nuclear weapons. That's the narrative we're given.
Yeah.
What's the truth about...
Wait. Yeah. Didn't you get the memo? Those were obliterated last year. What nuclear weapon? They were obliterated, right?
I don't even know what's real anymore. So, yeah. What's the truth about nuclear weapons?
The truth about nuclear weapons is Iran has the capability. They have the scientific, technical, engineering skill to build a nuclear weapon. But they have chosen not to because they are the Islamic Republic of Iran. And they adhere to the directions of the supreme leader. In this case, Ali Khamenei, who had said now for more than 23 years that building a nuclear weapon would be haram, would be a sin against God. And people say, well, how could you believe a guy like that? All right, let me give you another example. In 1980, excuse me, in 1980, when Saddam Hussein, with the encouragement of the U.S., the CIA in particular, launched the war against Iran, in part the U.S. wanted them to do it to put pressure on Iran to release the hostages. From that point forward, under Ronald Reagan, the cooperation between Iraq and the United States expanded, and we provided precursor chemicals to the Iraqis that were used to create weapons of mass destruction, chemical weapons. Then at the same time, through the CIA, and then later through the Defense Intelligence Agency, we provided the Iraqi government with intelligence about the location of Iranian troops, about their strength, about their vulnerabilities, and that information was used by Iraq to carry out more than 20 chemical weapon attacks against Iran from 1983, August of 83, through August of 88. And yet, during that entire period, never did Iran build a chemical weapon in retaliation, and they never used a chemical weapon against Iran, or against Iraq. So that's what I'm saying. The same principle. They had opportunity to do a weapon. They had the technical skill. They had the ability, but they didn't do it because it was a sin. Same thing as applies with the nuclear weapons. So this is an Israeli talking point. It's a lie. It's been on Bibi Netanyahu's claims for 36 years.
So, how long has Israel been pulling the strings? You said 95% of the Congress has been getting paid.
Yeah, it really it kicked in full force probably in the 1990s. That's when the money really started flowing, leading up to the first the project for the New American Century. Now remember what it's important to go back and look at how twisted U.S. policy is. So starting in like 1981, 82, the U.S. began supplying Iraq with money, with intelligence, precursor chemicals. We helped build up Iraq's military capabilities. We took them off. They were on the terrorist list. We took them off the terrorist list. So we were basically using Iraq as a proxy to attack Iran throughout the 1980s, up through 1988. So in comes 89, and Saddam he's actually instituting some political reforms in Iraq. And by 1990, at the first of the year, he realizes he claims that Kuwait is stealing oil from Iraq, and that they're drilling sideways into the Iraqi oil field, stealing the oil. So here Saddam sits down with April Glaspie, the U.S. ambassador. Now remember, we'd actually had a close working relationship with Iraq for the previous 9 years, using them as a proxy to attack Iran. So Saddam says, "Hey, look, I'm going to go deal with this. Do you guys got any objections?" And April Glaspie said, "No, we have no position on this. That's basically your business." Saddam goes, "Okay." So he launches the attack, and then we lose our shit. "Oh my God, Saddam Hussein is this monster." And then from then on, when we mounted the attack, we were going after his weapons of mass destruction. Well, who the fuck gave him the weapons of mass destruction? We did. I mean, for fuck's sake. I mean, we enabled him to carry out a war that killed more than 300,000 Iranians, including 70,000 civilians. And then we sit around and say, "God, those Iranians, they chant death to America." Yeah, I wonder why. We helped kill 300,000 of their citizens. We get pissed off at Al-Qaeda. They just killed 4,000. And we act like that's the end of the world. That's what I'm saying. This is the biggest bunch of gaslighting bullshit that has ever been visited upon any country in the history of the world, that we create these fake enemies and these fake narratives without accepting our role, our responsibility for making much of it happen. And yes, Iran has supported Hezbollah and Hamas. They're not out. They don't hate us because of our freedom. They don't hate us because we're Christians. They hate the damn European Jews that have come in taking their land from them. That's what they hate. I understand that. They're interlopers. Hell, we Americans, we did it to the Native Americans here in the United States. Just go ask the Sioux, the Cherokee, the Iroquois, the Comanche, the Apache, goes down the list, the Osage, the Algonquians. On and on and on. We exterminated an entire group of natives in this land with our European invasion. And then we got upset at them for fighting back.
Once again, Larry C. Johnson, you take the other pill. So, yeah. A lot of this, I mean, but it's, what about the Operation Freedom? Desert Storm Operation Freedom. Weapons of mass destruction. The more I talk to people like you and get the real scoop, the more I realize that the terrorists are closer than we want to admit. So is it all about the money? So
Yes.
basically that's
Yes.
what runs it, that's how this world works.
Yeah, that if you've ever seen the musical Cabaret, Joe
Yeah.
Gray, Liza Minnelli, they
Yeah.
got that one song, "Money, money, 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 money." Yeah, that's it. Or "Money makes the world go round, the world go round, the world go round."
Right, so I want to look at Canada. For first of all, for years, for a long time, Washington has said NATO is too one-sided, and now, we need some more help with the military stuff. And Mark Carney says Canada is stepping away from sending roughly 70% of its defense procurement through U.S. contractors, saying those days are over. Is this? I don't think this is what Washington was pushing for, but does this suggest that U.S. is losing some influence inside NATO with its allies? What's really driving Canada's decision here?
Have you ever had a friend that every time you guys went out, he made you buy dinner, made you buy drinks?
Are you talking about
And
me here?
yeah, and on top of it, he made more money than you. Did how long did that relationship last? That's what's going on here. The United States has been the bully, and we've expected everybody else to, cater to us. And then all of a sudden, when people start standing up, going, "Wait a second, I'm not going to do that anymore," then we get mad. Like we're entitled to exploit you. So yeah, I think that's what's going on. I actually applaud Carney on doing that. The United States, I am a patriot of what the United States was founded on. I am disgusted by what the United States is at this moment. We're a global bully. We have been inciting violence on almost without stop for the last, 70 years. Starting with Vietnam, and then it's just continued around the globe. Vietnam, Iran, 1953, the coup, 54, Arbenz, the coup in Guatemala. We've not been making the world a more peaceful place, and we certainly haven't been improving the lives of people. Well, we found a variety of ways to, we enable human trafficking and drug use and drug production. So it's, we like to paint a narrative for ourselves about what a great country we are. And we're out there doing good, but the fact is, we've caused more death and mayhem. We like to blame the communist China. Yeah, the Chinese, they sorted out a lot in their own country, and yeah, there were a lot of Chinese that were killed. But that was internal there. We've been doing it in Vietnam, Cambodia, Laos, Thailand, throughout Africa, throughout the Syria, Iraq, Afghanistan, down into Latin America. We've been around the world on that issue.
So we're Israel's BFF, sort of, I guess, because we're getting, because our leaders are getting paid by them. Do we have any other allies that still like us, or is it pretty much everyone against the U.S. at this point?
It's turning that way. Of course, let's be clear. We're Israel's bitch. Okay? Yeah. We
Okay.
yeah. They tell us what to do, not the other way around. I mean, it's like back when we had arrested Jonathan Pollard for spying for Israel. He gets imprisoned. And then Bibi Netanyahu calls up Bill Clinton and says, "Okay, we need you to let Mr. Pollard out of prison. You need to let him go, come back to Israel." And Bill Clinton's trying to say, "Well, no." And then Bibi says, "Well, got these interesting recordings and photographs of you getting blowjobs from Monica Lewinsky. Now, we'd be most happy to keep that quiet, but you know what? We may be compelled to release it to the public. What do you think, Bill?" "Well, I think Jonathan Pollard ought to be free." "That's a good call there, Bill. Way to go."
Is this sort of what's happening with the Epstein files, you think? Is it
Yes.
related at all with the war in Iran?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look at what, when Melania Trump, before I'd been wanting to try to make excuses and say, "Nah, if it had been that bad, that would have been out before." But then Melania Trump comes out last week on the with a word that this her friend of 20 years, 20 plus years, Ungaro, was going to be spilling the beans completely about the relationship between the Trumps and Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell. And what was sad about it is, you know, I think Melania has been a pretty dignified lady, but God, she came out and just lied her ass off. I didn't know Ghislaine Maxwell. You know, she, you know, instead of doing the Bill Clinton Arkansas accent, I did not have sexual relations with that lady, Monica Lewinsky. You know, she does it with a European accent. I did not know Ghislaine Maxwell. You know, it's like, oh, for God's sake. And then they produce the emails where she's like, hey, G, hey, that was a great photo shoot. See you down there, and I'll be, you know. You don't email people that are casual acquaintances like that. So, you know, so they're trying to get in front of a story that's going to come out that's going to be even more damning for Donald Trump. And this, you know, it's going to destroy his presidency. He's between this war and his just vicious, brutal attacks on people, on Candace Owens, Tucker Carlson, Alex Jones, Megyn Kelly. You know, he's lost it. You know, he's attacking the very people who went out of their way to support him at a time when many others didn't. And the turn on him on social media, he thinks if he can control what the storyline is on Fox News, that, you know, he's on top of the world. Nobody watches them anymore. They tune in to see, you know, just what they're doing, but they really don't care, and they're certainly not paying attention to the ads to figure out what new weight loss medicine do they need to buy.
So, Larry, I got a couple questions here. One, the U.S. is losing friends left and right. Can this relationship with the allies be repaired? One. And then two, with the Epstein files we talked about, you know, like if the truth is with the Epstein files and money controls everything, I don't see how the truth about the Epstein files gets released. And so how does this story end?
How does this what?
How does this story end? This war with Iran? I mean, where do things go with Trump and the administration
I think that this war will drag on until August, without the United States making any kind of progress, and with the economic problems increasing as a result of the war. I could see, I think it's likely Israel will be asking Hezbollah for a ceasefire sometime in the next 2 to 3 weeks, because Israel can't sustain the losses they're taking by trying to enter in and take territory in southern Lebanon. They've lost over 100 Merkava battle tanks right now. That's an incredible loss for a country that small. You ask the question that, can we repair these relationships with allies? Yeah, you can always repair it if you're willing to make some changes in how you do business and how you treat people and how you talk to people. The real question is, are we as Americans, are our political leaders willing to make those changes? And I would argue, I'd say no. We're trapped in our own arrogance and hubris. I give you an example that in dealing with Russia. You know, we could start off by saying, you know what? We recognize we've played a role in the death and destruction of Russians, and we want to get that behind us. We want to get on a normal relationship. Therefore, immediately, we're lifting all sanctions on travel back and forth between the United States and Russia, and we're unfreezing all of your assets. We're doing that as a gesture of goodwill to show you we're serious about negotiations. We haven't done that. Not at all. You know, we still show up like they owe us a favor. So there's a lot the United States could do, except we're of an attitude that we've got to control, dominate, and dictate to what others do. So as long as we keep that attitude, we're going to keep losing out.
Larry, I appreciate the insights you always share. I always get sobered up every time I talk to you. But how do people follow you, follow your work, your socials, and get some good news? That
Yeah,
not by
well,
good news, I mean like the honest news. And
let's call it honest news. I wish I had good news. It's Larry Johnson. So it's sonar21.com. That's the blog. I do on X. It's sonar21 as well. This is in Charles Dickens' The Christmas Carol. There's the initial encounter between Scrooge and the dead partner, Marley. The ghost Marley is standing in front of him. And Scrooge says, "Marley, speak comfort to me." And Marley says,
there is
"I
none.
have none to give."
That's Larry C. Johnson for you.
Yeah, just call me Marley.
Right. Larry, Marley, thank you so much for your time. I'm just Steve Yang, learning alongside you from people smarter than me, like Larry C. Johnson. Everybody, stay smart, stay curious, stay disciplined, stay safe. Larry, thanks so much.
All right, buddy. Hey, it's always a pleasure. We'll see you again.
All right, be good, my friend. Bye.
Bye, Steve.